Hello and welcome to Trailing Blazers. You can find us on iTunes as part of the Almighty Baller Podcast Network. You can find us on Twitter at Trailing Blazers, on Facebook under Trailing Blazers. We are pretty much everywhere. I am your co-host, Dan Morang, as always joined by my good friend and, well, just the guy in the know, Taylor Danforth. Taylor, kind of an interesting week here in Portland. Blazers rattle off some wins, but we got a kind of media kerfuffle as the week wound down as a local radio host, talk show host with 1080 The Fan, Isaac Ropp, was let go of CSNW's Talking Ball, and he's blaming Neil O'Shea. What's kind of your first reaction to this?
Yeah, not at all what I expected. I didn't anticipate, because I knew we were going to record the cast. I was thinking about, all right, Blazers 4-1 in their last five, throwing the Lakers a couple times, the Hornets at home, that should happen. They're playing good basketball, though, and things are turning around, and it just was a headline that surprised me. So I texted, I used to work at The Fan. Isaac was my radio mentor. He was the guy that, when I started in the industry, I really picked his brain and tried to get help from. So I really respect him, and he's really good at what he does. And for him to come out now and really just kind of go after Neil O'Shea and not hold anything back. I mean, he has been super honest and super upfront about what he thinks and why it's bad. And he's just gone right after Neil O'Shea. So I guess my first reaction was that it was surprising to me that he went so hard after Neil, and fans are definitely caught up in it. I don't know how you're not, you know, if you pay any attention to the Blazers on any level, whether it's the media or you listen to our podcast or watch Talking Ball, you know who Isaac is at some point, and obviously you know who Neil O'Shea is. So, and then Jason Quick and everybody that covers the team, you and Blazers Edge, I think fans are pretty familiar with the media situation and what's going on. I was just surprised that Isaac took it public. I didn't think he was going to.
And I think that's what's caught a lot of people off guard. If you had your ear to the ground for any length of time over really, I think, the last decade, you knew that the way that Portland is portrayed in the media here locally, in this Northwest bubble, is different than, say, New York or LA or any of the other major markets. But
yeah,
what was eye-opening to me was, I think you kind of alluded to it there, was the veracity and how blunt Isaac was in his comments. And
think about that, Dan. How often does that happen? Yeah, how often does that happen where you get a general manager called out in that way by a media member? Because most of the time, you'll be danced around or softened somehow. Very rarely does a media figure come out in that particular fashion. Well, and very rarely, too. I mean, it's a unique circumstance because very rarely. It happened, I think, with the Washington Redskins a while back, where the owner of the Redskins, Snyder, just basically said, no, we're not going to hire this. I don't like this guy for my radio station, because he owned the radio station as well. And this all goes back. Paul Allen's the same way. So Paul Allen used to own, I think a lot of people know this, but Paul Allen used to own, at the time, it was 95.5 The Game. And they had the Blazers and the Ducks. And there were, Dwight was on there, Chad Dewing was on there, Wheels, Jay Allen, and, Kenny Vance did a noon show, a noon to three show. And they basically, everybody on that station had to say, whatever Paul Allen wanted them to say. And I think Bobby Corser was there at the time, and it was just not a positive environment for those guys. And I was the Fan at the time, and they were our competitor, and it was so easy to beat them because, with Isaac and Zook at least, because they were the local show, it was really easy for Isaac and Zook to beat them. Because they were honest about the Blazers, and it wasn't because they were more talented, although Isaac and Zook were super talented. It was because they could be honest about the team. And when Paul Allen owned that station before he sold it, you couldn't be honest about the team. So it's just it's a bizarre situation for both Isaac calling him out, but also for a GM to get involved in something so trivial as Isaac Ropp's opinion is a little concerning for me as a Blazers fan.
I think there's a couple things going on here. First of all, media members are dismissed pretty often in both radio and TV. And I mean, you look. Let's look at the Blazers' history the last couple years. They've gone through a TV crew change. They've swapped up personalities on the radio. The pre and post game show hosts have swapped. The CSN show. Well, before Dan Sheldon was on the scene, it was Ian Furness, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, that's it. In what, the past 6 years, all those changes have been made.
Well, Isaac hosted Talkin' Ball for a while, and then he was moved over to the opinion side of things because he's good. He's good at what he does, and he provides a perspective. And Dwight's the same way. Dwight James is pretty critical of the Blazers too. And I can see, and it was a tweet, by the way, it was the one I think that kind of set him over the edge. Like I said, I've known Isaac for a while now, and I've watched him work. And yeah, he's critical of the Blazers, but how could you not be with where they were in the season? And now that they're better, I mean, things shift. You can be a fan, I guess, and be an eternal optimist, and even when things are going bad, have a positive outlook and think things are going to get better. But even the players and coaches acknowledged, like, look, when we're getting blown out on Martin Luther King Day in Washington, D.C., it's embarrassing. That performance at 9 a.m. in the morning here, when everybody's waking up and has the day off to watch it, is embarrassing. And if they're able to admit that, why can't a TV analyst say as much without getting fired? It's just a bad, bad look. And we're talking about, like, the Blazers, the organization. It's strictly Neil O'Shea. And I don't think it goes beyond that. I really don't. I think it's Neil O'Shea and Paul Allen. Unfortunately, they're in control of everything, but the guys below them are some of the ones that take the brunt, but they don't want to be involved in that. In fact, and I'm kind of rambling here, but I had a meeting. So, you know, Bunker and I did the morning show on the flagship station, 620 Rip City Radio. And before our show started, I've got two stories. So before our show even started, we were filling in for Wheels. And this is the day after Wesley Matthews went down. And I said at the time, I said, this is over. It's done. I said, Wesley's the glue guy. There's no way this team survives. And like, no, you got Aaron Aflalo. It's going to be fine. I was like, no, it's not. They're going to fall apart. And LaMarcus is going to leave. And it's going to be a complete rebuild. I was like, they are in trouble. It's exactly what happened. Neil O'Shea, I didn't like that I had that opinion and wasn't very happy. That was my opinion. So my boss was called and contacted, and I was talked to about that opinion. But that's exactly what happened. And it was because it was told to me is because that was the first day of the show, and you got to kind of, it's the flagship. And so you have to have some sort of, yeah, we want you to be honest, but not too honest. And that was kind of the conversation. So I was like, all right, well, then you hired the wrong guy. So we've got to have a conversation about this. So then we went in and talked to the guys who are in charge of marketing and content creation and social media. And they said, no. We want you to, well, the president of marketing basically said, we want you to be as honest as you can be, because otherwise people won't listen and they won't take you seriously. So you've got to be honest, and you've got to be straightforward about what you think about our team. If we suck, you have to say we suck. If we're not very good, or somebody blows a call or a shot, you've got to call us out on that, and which was great. It was great to hear. So there's a definite disconnect between Neil O'Shea and Paul Allen and the rest of that organization, because the rest of that organization is made up of people from Portland who understand Portland, and they understand what it's like to be a sports fan. I think Neil O'Shea and Paul Allen are so far out of it and out of touch that they don't know what that's like.
And here's where I was kind of going with the changeover of personnel in media. Normally, it's just kind of an accepted thing, right? You move from one market to another. I mean, it, to me, if Mike Barrett wants a job in play-by-play, he'll get a job in play-by-play. He's one of the best out there as far as being a textbook play-by-play guy. People want to talk about Homer this and that, go back and listen to early Mike Barrett. He's one of the best play-by-play callers in the entire business. He's phenomenal.
He's really talented.
Yeah, part of that Homerism is something that, at least in my belief, was pushed on him. And it's easy to do because he's a local Oregon guy, you know, grew up in the Valley. And I understood why they made the change, but And I'm still waiting to see what happens out of all of this. You didn't hear anything from Mike Barrett. Now, that might be a non-disclosure agreement or whatever, because he's still technically under contract. But that also goes to show the same kind of trend from pretty much every other media member, because if you get removed from a position, typically it's going to do nothing but hurt you if you burn that bridge, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, usually, yeah. You never want to burn bridges. I mean, that's the last thing on your way out.
And
to burn a bridge.
That's the thing here is that
what. By the way, when is the last time a bridge was burnt?
Yeah, I think that's what's making this such big news.
No, sorry. Like, I mean, literally. When,
oh, yeah.
Literally was the last time a bridge was burnt.
Sherwood, dude. Sherwood, Oregon, man. Somebody
seriously?
Set arson. Somebody set fire to the railway bridge, if I'm not mistaken. I think it was like 2 years
ago. Is that a real story?
Yeah, I'm going to have to go look that one up. But yeah, somebody set fire to the Sherwood Rail Bridge.
I stand corrected here. I thought I was being funny and snarky, and turns out joke's on me. So what were you saying about...
The thing is that it doesn't behoove them to say anything, even if they were jobbed or slighted or whatever. In Isaac's case, he's in a unique space and circumstance where talking ball isn't his go-to. It's not his main deal. He's a radio host for 1080.
That's a radio host who gets paid handsomely.
Yeah, and he's been
and
in this
been
market
there
for
time.
I think he said 17 years. So
he's been around a long time.
He's pretty safe in his own skin and in his job, in that taking this away from him probably takes away some dollars. But he's going to be just fine. But he's still in a position to be able to sit here and go, you know what? You want to do this? Fine. Here's what's up. And I don't think it's
just
out of spite
move.
Of anything. And that, exactly. And that's where I'm kind of getting to with this, in that the Neil O'Shea that I know and the Blaze organization I know is cool, calm, collected, and calculating. There's
that's what
no...
Like think.
Well, yeah. But there's no win in this scenario for them, is there?
No, I don't think so. I don't think there's a win in it at all. And other than you get a guy off the air who is trashing you, I guess. I mean, that's the win. That's the ultimate goal, is to replace him with somebody who's going to be more positive. But the negative coverage of this far outweighs whatever negative things Isaac would say about the team. I don't understand. Here's why this is relevant, and here's why this is important. Is that if you're Neil O'Shea and you're the Blazers organization, the fact that you care, and again, this is why this is important, why they care what Isaac says matters, and it's concerning, because you shouldn't, right? If it's the famous you never beef down. If they're worried and Neil O'Shea is concerned with what Jason Quick is writing or what you're writing or what we're talking about on a podcast, that's a problem. That's an issue. You should never have your GM or your coach be worried about what people are saying or thinking about you. You just can't have it. And so that's why this is a story, because I can understand why fans would say, well, why does it matter? Why does it matter what happens between a media guy and a radio host and a television host and the GM? Who cares? That doesn't affect me. But it does, because it shows the insecurity of your GM. It shows how toxic that situation and culture is. That's a toxic culture. That's a really, I mean, look, regardless of your political opinion, if you have a leader, a CEO or a president or whoever that is insecure, that could be used against that particular person. And so I think that's why this matters to people and should matter, is that if a GM is saying, I want this media guy off of here because he's negative, that's a problem. But for a guy who is usually pretty calculating, I don't know that he – I think – here's what I think, Dan. I think he thought, I can quietly do this and nobody – and maybe he's is suspicious, but there's no way he's going to say anything, because that would be career suicide. He definitely underestimated Isaac.
And that's where I think – that's where I was kind of going with this, in that you may have gotten him off talking ball, but he still has the largest radio market share in the region.
By far. By far. The most listened to show by far.
Yeah, and he's on the air for 4 hours a day, whereas on talking ball, he's there for what, half hour, 45 minutes? Hour, tops?
Yeah. And at most, he's talking 15 to 30 seconds at a time every couple of minutes.
So
he doesn't talk that much.
What was really achieved here? I mean, I guess I keep going back to the point, like, what was there to gain?
Like getting him off of your network, I guess. But that's the thing. Like if,
and then I gotta stop you right there. Hold on. That's the key there. It's not their network. It's Comcast Sportsnet. It's a partner. And that's the scary thing. I do work at Blazers Edge. I do a podcast there. I write there. And earlier today, I got to talk with Isaac about this whole situation. And nice. Hearing everything that came out of this, it was so eye-opening. I'm just sitting there kind of shaking my head with my mouth open. Like, you've got to be kidding me. Like, how does... Okay, the example that I keep going back to is the Yankees. They're in the biggest market in the world, arguably. And there's how many media outlets? They still have their own in-house network and the Yes Network. That's their face of the franchise. That's what they communicate through. It's what they broadcast on. But there's a clear delineation between them, the New York Post, the Times, all the other media outlets that are out there. And you know that going in. So there's plenty of dissent to be had. And the thing that Isaac brought up was he categorized people as ones, twos, and threes. The threes were the dissenters. The ones were the people who really don't matter. And the twos were the people that would bend over backwards to get access. They'd sacrifice whatever it was necessary to get there. And that's how you get in this nasty gray area of not being able to tell where the line is between the company line and what somebody's clear objective viewpoint is.
Well, and this is where there's television and radio is different, right? Different mediums. You're talking for 3 hours a day on the network. But I know that from a radio standpoint, the radio guys are usually Wheels is a super positive guy in general. But you know, he's genuinely positive just because that's kind of what you have to be on radio. But our bosses at iHeartMedia were very good about saying, look, we are not owned by the Portland Trailblazers. They don't tell us what to do. They don't dictate. We're partners in this. No, for sure. But it's a two-way partnership. We're benefiting them and they're benefiting us. It has to work that way. It's an exchange of goods. It's the very basic form of I'm giving you this, you're giving me that. And there's a transaction there. So our bosses were really good about saying, hey, if you say something, we'll back you up. And that was huge. So I put this as much on Comcast as I do. Like, you got to be strong. And you have to have some sort of principles where you say, no, we're not going to be – we owe it to our listeners. We owe it to our fan base to report what's honestly happening. And if there's something going on in the locker room – when the Blazers are struggling and everybody's looking around and going, well, what's happening? We want answers as fans because I'm paying season ticket prices. I'd like some answers of why there's dysfunction. And they're saying to the reporters, no, you can't report because Neil O'Shea says you can't report. That's a serious problem. That's a serious problem. And so I blame Comcast, their executives just as much as I do, for letting that happen. As I do Neil O'Shea trying to make it happen, because I can understand why Neil O'Shea would want to make it happen. But Comcast has got to have the backbone to say, no, that's great. We're partners. But no. This is our employee and we're going to keep him.
And here's what I find kind of disturbing. And I don't want to poach too much from the Blazers Edge podcast here. But Isaac, in his original audio that came out yesterday, said, you know, I don't know if it's in Comcast contract where the Blazers have input on who or who is or who isn't going to be in a position like Isaac's on Talkin' Ball. Well, today he said that, you know, he's been told that perhaps it is in that contract.
That would not shock me at all.
That scares the crap out of me.
Yeah, well, I know that in radio there are certain stipulations in there, and I won't say what it is because I don't want to breach the contract. I don't know if I can get in trouble. But I know that there are certain things in the radio contract that are obligations of iHeart and 620 to do on behalf of the Blazers. So in any time, you can put whatever you want into a contract, and I would not be surprised. Yeah, I would not be surprised at all if that was one of the asks for in media contracts. You can, like, a radio host can say, there's a radio host in Seattle who says, anytime Louisville is in, this is a real contract, anytime Louisville's in the Sweet 16 or the Final Four, I think, Elite Eight or Final Four, I get all expense paid trip to go watch them play. And that's in his contract. So you'd be amazed at the things that are in radio and television contracts. And that wouldn't shock me at all if that exists. And I know, I mean, it is just sports, right? At the end of the day, it's not politics. It's not, but it is business.
But it's the grand scheme of talking about the media landscape, isn't it?
Yes, it is that. And it's also business. And that's where I think it is important, because there, and Bunker and I talked about this a lot, like, the media is very self-righteous. They think they're way more important than they are. But there is an element of reporting that is necessary, because there's a financial investment from fans. If there wasn't a financial investment from fans, then it wouldn't be a big deal. But if you're lying or trying to manipulate fans into spending money, which is what they're doing, and you're doing it under false pretenses, or you're trying to manipulate a certain message to get them to spend money, that's disingenuous. In my mind. And so that's why I take exception to it, and I've got a problem with it, and I don't know how you feel about it, but that's why I take Isaac's side in this, is that, and this is at the top, I'm not talking about the employees, because the employees are great. I have great relationships with all of them, but I'm talking, like, at the very, very top. If you're trying to control the message and ask for money, then that's a problem.
See, I'm with you for the most part, but I also understand controlling the narrative. And that's what Blazers Broadcasting is. That's their in-house broadcast team. That's the pre and post game, that's Lamar and Kevin. Those guys can control the message all they want. I have no problem with that. Every company in the world should be trying to control their own message. But
yeah, but even then you have to have some sort of honesty, right?
I would like to assume that that's the case, but I don't think I'm naive enough to think that that's the case anymore. I mean,
yeah, that's true.
And that's not unique to Portland by any means. That's just, I think,
no.
There's business in general nowadays. But once you get off that platform, I mean, who has really been critical in the local media in the Neil O'Shea era?
Not many. I mean, the Aldridge stuff was people were critical during the Aldridge stuff. There's no doubt. And
well, let's point out a particular example here. Eric Gunderson.
Yeah, he's a good one.
He has a source that says LaMarcus is gone. It's a source he trusts. Gunderson's a great reporter. Has anybody ever questioned Gunderson's motives before?
No, dude. I had this story. I had that Aldridge story.
I know where you're going with this one. I know this one. This one's good.
Yeah, so I knew his realtor, and he's a good buddy of mine, and LaMarcus went to him and goes, "Hey man, this wasn't Damon Stoudemire's house, because that story kind of blew up, but it was LaMarcus's actual house that he was listing." And he said, "Hey man, I'm leaving, but you can't tell anybody. You got to sell this quietly, and nobody can know it's my home." So of course, the first thing he does is text. Little did LaMarcus know that his, like, good friend from college is a radio host for the Blazers Network. And so, yeah, so he texted me. He goes, "Hey man, just so you know, he's gone." But that I didn't go to air with it. But Gunderson found out, and I think there's probably other ways that, you know, people found out. That was how I found out. But it shaped my opinion the entire time. I was like, "No, he's good." Like my prediction was that he was going to go, right? So it made me look really smart. But so I think things like you mentioned, Gunderson is a prime example of that.
Well, let me go ahead and tell the Gunderson thing here, as far as how it's been told to me and interpreted from other media members, is that Neil O'Shea hears that Gunderson's got this piece that says LaMarcus is gone. Neil O'Shea pumps the brakes, stops everything, and calls a press conference basically to call Gunderson out and call him a liar and refute everything he's just written.
Dude, I knew it was bad. I knew it was bad when, and I asked Gulliver about this. This was 3 years ago now when I was at the Fan. I knew it was bad. He snapped, Olshay did, on Golliver. Bad. When he asked a question about LaMarcus, and I asked Ben about it on the air, and you know, he gave a good politically correct answer. You know, like, I was just doing my job, and he's free to respond however he wants. But I was like, oh my goodness, all he did was ask a question about LaMarcus Aldridge. That the Fans want to know that. And Neil Olshay just snapped at him. I was like, dude, you've got such thin skin. Why? Where is this coming from?
And that goes back to what Rob said in calling him sports Trump.
Yeah.
And no matter where you sit politically, it's a pretty apt description if what nearly every member of the media that's ever interacted with him has relayed to me. I mean, this isn't just Portland media. This is national media. This is media from other markets that have sat in on press conferences. I mean, it's the same narrative. It's one thing if you have a vindictive reporter, and those do exist.
But there are a lot of them. Yeah, there's a lot of them out there.
I wouldn't say, at least in my mind, I wouldn't say a lot just because of the media that I typically work with.
Dude, there's a healthy amount of people that if they are spurned, they will have a negative opinion to that person forever.
That's the difference between having an axe to grind and just looking to sabotage people. Having an axe to grind, I can understand that. That's human nature sometimes. It's ugly, but...
Yeah, I'll admit, I've had that happen before where I've had an athlete say something or do something to me, and the next time, you know, an opinion came up, I was like, oh, man, screw that guy. Like, I'm not going to defend that guy when I... And if he would have been nicer to me, I might have tried to defend him a little bit more. But it's like, nah, if he was awful to me, I'm not going to stick up for this guy. So, I mean, like you said, yeah, human.
It's natural human interaction.
Yes, but the level you're talking about is different.
Yeah, there aren't that many of the true vindictive reporters and media members. And in that vein, how as a... president of basketball operations, you can target members of the media, so-called, you know, and call them out on things like that. It really makes
you look bad.
I mean, not just that, the way it makes me feel, it's dirty. Like it's
yeah. Why though? Why does it make you feel dirty? Like why should fans care about it? You know why. Why does it matter?
I think that kind of gets down to the crux of the whole deal in that I don't really see myself as media. I've had a lot of people refer to me as media because I do work for Blazers Edge and I get on live radio on 620. And I mean, heck, after we're done with this podcast here, I'll be getting on the radio with a good friend of mine and talking about the game tonight. So I guess in a sense I'm media, but I've never felt compelled one way or the other to change my thoughts, opinion, or narrative about a person, place, or thing in sports or anything that I've written about or covered because of influence from somebody else. Like, I mean, and this is probably because I'm just the small fish, but I don't care what you have to say or do or how you push me one way or the other. My opinion is my opinion formed on A, B, C, X, Y, and Z. And yeah. I think, and I'm not saying that my kind of reporting or writing or podcasting or anything along those lines is anywhere above or beyond anybody else's, but I think that once you lose that ability to have that objective and informed opinion, I mean, what's the point of even discussing sports or politics or whatever, you know, you're talking about?
Right. And I think that's the problem is that you have to have just in general, and this is I can go on for hours about this, I won't, but you've gotta have access to information, honest information, right? And then allow people to disseminate it and figure out what they want to do with it whenever they get it, right? That's up to them. So I'm with you there is like in terms of just being able to be honest. I'm just a big believer and I was this way when I was on the radio on 620 of being honest about what was happening. And that's okay. You know, it's okay to say, man, CJ McCollum, didn't play well last night. what's going on with him? Like, that's okay to say. We're going to talk to him because he comes on our show every Friday. It doesn't change how we feel about CJ. It doesn't change anything. It's just to say that it's okay to acknowledge, hey, I'm 30 pounds overweight. I need to get in shape, you know, instead of like denying the fact that you're overweight and need to get in shape. It's the same thing in sports. When we look at these guys, I just don't understand it. And I think there are guys that are really good on this team about, for the most part, channeling that. Like, there's nothing wrong with reading everything about you. There's nothing wrong with internalizing it and using it as motivation. I know for a fact, because I've watched them do it, that Stotts does, Lillard does, CJ does. Everybody on that team reads, except for maybe Al-Farouq Aminu. They read Blazers Edge. They read Oregon Live. They listen. They want to know, and it's natural. If people were saying things about you and I, we'd want to know what those things are being said, just so you're aware of what exists and what goes on.
Heck, it's even what my own you small then world.
Do with that.
Even
sure.
My own small world. I get stuff sent to me. I get stuff, texts, DMs, emails, comment sections. I've seen it in numerous places. And hell yeah, I read it. Let's rewind this 6 months. I don't want to use myself too much in this example, but this is kind of my experience. I'm not like Dolliver, who's been doing this for 10 years. I'm not like Rob, who's been doing it for 20 years, or Dwight James, who's been doing it since Methuselah. I love you,
I
Dwight.
I like that shot. Methuselah was a weird pull.
I was thinking of somebody like old, right?
Methuselah fetish or something?
I don't know, man. I was going with old. So... I mean, let's rewind this 6 months ago. I said the Blazers weren't going to be that good this year. It was just my gut feeling. I thought they overachieved. And it wasn't because I hate this team. Anybody who knows me knows how much I love this franchise. But in that same vein, I it's not in my blood to be a fanboy. I'm going to be blunt, and I'm going to be honest, and I'm going to just kind of break things down as I see them. And the most common retort that I had to people who were like, you're so negative, you're a pessimist, you're just out here for hot takes, was, you don't think I'd want, like, to see these guys succeed? Then you don't know me. Like, if I write something negative about somebody, it's not because, oh, I want them to do terrible, I want them to read this and internalize it, and it'll just ruin them. No. When I write about Damian Lillard struggling defensively, I hope to God he figures it out. Nobody would be happier to be proven wrong about his ability to improve defensively than me.
Yeah, and I always said that too when I was with Bunker and I was always like, I'm a little different than you. It's like, I'm a fan first and foremost and not a media member, and I would always approach it, but I think there's great fan, all fans are great. I like fans and I relate to fans that are positively pessimistic, if that makes sense. I like fans that are that'll show up to games and go, we're probably not going to beat the Warriors tonight, but I'm going to cheer as if we are. And I think that's okay, right? I don't think you have to go into every single – like, there are fans that do that, and I think it's great. Like, right now – like, this year, for example, the Blazers aren't going to win an NBA championship. That's not negative. That's not pessimistic. And this is part of the conversation that Robin was having about, like, – it's not pessimistic or negative for Isaac to get on Talking Ball and say the Blazers aren't going to make it to the NBA Finals. It's not. It's just a realistic opinion based off of all the facts, and it's his opinion. Now, if they do, of course he's going to like root for them, and it's great. It's great for everybody if that happens. But you've got to give your opinions based off the facts. And I think why this matters, again, I keep getting back to, like, for me personally, why it matters and why it's important is because – for the longest time, the culture of the Blazers has been a problem, right? Late 90s, early 2000s on, the culture has been something that has hurt this team. And Brandon was able to absorb a lot of that, and Damian is able to absorb a lot of it. But I thought, and I still do for the most part, that the culture of this organization was headed in a good direction and headed in a positive direction. I was like, all right, great. Paul Allen's finally trusted his GM. You got a GM who's competent. You got Chris McGowan, who's really good at running business operations and really smart and savvy in that department. You got a really good coach in Stotts, and you got a star in Lillard. and top to bottom, things are in sync. You look at just a disaster of a situation, Sacramento over the last like 5 or 10 years, you can really see what a terrible organization does. And you look at the Spurs, who are a great organization, and how they're able to reload. So why it matters to me is that it tells me that it's not as healthy as we thought, right? It's going in and getting your heart checked, and you're skinny, and all of a sudden you've got blockage in your arteries, and you're like, well, wait a second, I didn't know that was there.
You got that pre-diabetes. And that's,
yeah, it's that pre-diabetes. And so I think that's exactly what that's a perfect description. The Blazers have pre-diabetes and with Neil O'Shea. Because if things do go bad, and like they were earlier in the season, then if that's the personality of Neil O'Shea, and here's another reason why it matters. If that's the personality of Neil O'Shea, and he's not willing to accept responsibility, and he's insecure, you know what the first thing he's going to do is he's going to fire Terry Stotts.
And if you thought things were bad when Mike and Mike were removed?
Yeah. Yep. He's going to fire Terry Stotts.
Because I don't know. Do you know a single person? Have you run into anybody who thinks that Terry Stotts is the wrong coach for this team?
No. But the argument that could be made is that defensively they're not improving. That would maybe be the argument, but players wouldn't be happy. It's just you don't want a GM operating out of insecurity, man. And you've seen a lot of that. Like I think the Evan Turner signing was an insecure signing. I do, and that's not what you want out of your GM. Neil O'Shea has gone from loved to at least people that are fans of Isaac or listen to him. And you know, fan of the Blazers, watch what he did with Evan Turner. Now he may pull something from the deadline. It's results based business, right? If he pulls off something at the deadline and makes a great move and gets Nerlens Noel and maybe a pick and somehow is able to kind of retool his team, then everybody will be right back to it. But a large factor is that they're not very good right now. So Neil O'Shea becomes an easy target. You throw in this Isaac thing, and it just kind of compounds itself.
It's as much as I want to go back to just Neil O'Shea, I keep going back to the grander, I don't know, the relationship between organization, media, and fans. There's supposed to be clear delineations on where one...
Who sets that, though?
To me, it's the media. The media is supposed to set that boundary.
Yeah, but this is the debate that I was getting with journalists, right? Because journalists... I'm talking like traditional sense of journalist who went to journalism school.
Went to J school and did all that, yeah.
Yeah, because there's like an ethics course and what the media should and shouldn't do. And I always ask them, based off what? Like, are you creating your – like, who says – and this is where I'll support Neil O'Shea. Who says that the media should have access, right? That's just a made-up – that's a made-up thing. There's no law. There's no right – there's nothing that says it. There is in our Constitution about the freedom of the press, but that's to protect from powerful governments. There's nothing in sports that says media has to have access outside of the rules and the collective bargaining agreement between media partners. But there's nothing that says, yes, X journalist has to have 10 minutes with Damian Lillard. That doesn't exist. So I always ask people, and I'm curious what you think about, like, why media matters and why it's important for that relationship to exist.
And I think this goes back, you're tying it in perfectly here, in that I think that they're not the arbiter of goodness, but they're supposed to be the arbiter of objectivity. And in an industry like sports, and as much as it pains me to say this, in industry such as politics, there needs to be an arbiter of what is good and real and trustworthy and objective. And there can be a place for nuance and objective reporting and analysis, and there can also be a place for biased reporting and analysis. I mean, that's what you see with in-house production teams and media teams, and I have no problem with that. Let them control their narrative. That's fine by me.
They should hold all should, and
yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's
wheels should, and yeah,
and
that's
the same for every franchise in professional sports. I have absolutely no problem with that. But at the same token, I mean, particularly here in this country, while yes, you're right that there's nothing written that says that you have to be granted access, at the same token, if you're not going to grant access, you also shouldn't be able to criticize those that are criticizing you. And that's where that two-way street, that arbiter of the press kind of comes in. Okay, if you want us to tell a story, we want unimpeded access so that we can ask questions, so we can tell the story as it needs to be told and not as the one you want to be told.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's what the Blazers, with the hiring of Holdall and making him a reporter, their effort was to try and capture some of the, and this is, I mean, we can talk about this forever, but when you're attempting to generate revenue and clicks, it changes things. It changes how you report things. It changes your perspective on things. And the Blazers are after clicks like they should be. But there's nothing, again, there's nothing, and I don't think you and I would ever argue, there's nothing wrong with Casey Holdall's position. But you just know going into it what you're getting. He's going to offer you some cool behind the scenes stories and access, but you're never going to go to Casey Holdall for what's wrong with this team. You're just not. You're going to go to him for cool stories and cool pieces about relationships with, you know, Damian and Chris Kamen. You're going to go to him for plenty of things, and he's really good and knowledgeable about the Blazers. But when they're in the midst of a losing streak, and he probably knows what's going on, but he's not going to be able to say it. So to your point, I think that's where – I just don't know if sports is important enough for it to matter, if that makes sense.
In my sense, sports is
because it's just a game at the end of the day, right?
It is, but in this country particularly, it's a foundational pillar. We can have a discussion another time about whether or not it should or shouldn't be, but at least in my mind, it is. I mean,
I agree. You know, like, we're talking culturally about, and
in a couple days, the entire country is going to shut down and watch TV for the Super Bowl.
And a halftime show and commercials and everything else.
And that will be the only thing that's talked about. Nobody will care about President Trump. Nobody will care about Neil O'Shea. Nobody will care.
Well, they will, because they'll work it into the Super Bowl. They'll find a way to work
There will be some Trump commercials. This is true. But yeah, it'll be a respite from everything else in the world for 5 hours. And I think that goes to show the impact of sport and media and what each role is in this country today. And again, like you said, we can have the discussion on whether or not it should be that way, but the current situation we find ourselves in is, it's a foundational piece. And so I think when you start getting into stuff like this exact situation, and I'll touch on the Blazers Edge podcast here one more time, when you have multiple people who were well-respected media members in their own mediums saying the same thing over and over and over again, that really bothers me. And not in the sense that, oh my God, I hate Neil O'Shea. It's just the fact that it's allowed to happen. And it's been allowed to happen for years. And I think that's what's really, at least in my mind, what has caught people's attention is that people are finding out that, wow, like, do the Trailblazers and Neil O'Shea and the Vulcans, do they really have that much control?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'll go one step further. The practicality of it is, what does that look like for employees? What kind of culture does that create? What does that say when you're getting rid of Mike and Mike? What does it say when you're getting rid of Isaac? You know, you're running a business. You're free to fire whoever you want for whatever reason you want, and that's fine. Like, they're perfectly entitled to do that, but they're just a pattern starts to emerge, right? I've always maintained this is kind of one of my tenets. I've always maintained that people are really good at recognizing patterns, and that for the most part, one of our skills as Americans is that we're usually pretty dubious and hesitant to believe things right away.
We don't trust the damn thing. Words,
exactly. Like, if you're selling us a product, you have to really, really sell it. Just because we're so conditioned, our BS meter is really, really high. Like we're just really good at weeding out inauthentic people. Right. And we're really, really good at knowing when we're being sold something. We're really good at knowing when people are passionate about something or they don't care. That's just a skill that we have as Americans. And I think when you start to, and I think another thing that we're really good at from movies and TV and culture is piecing things together and starting to go, wait a second here, what's going on? And that's, there's been little clues and breadcrumbs that have been dropped over the last couple of years that you start to piece them together and you go, oh, wait a second, what's going on? What's going on here? What's going on behind the scenes? And I think it's important for me to say it is that this is at the very top. This is the Vulcans and the O'Shea. And though, so when we say the Blazers, that's who we're referring to. It's Vulcans and it's Neil. And that tends to be a problem because you don't know as a fan where you stand. You don't know, all right, so I'm going to emotionally invest in this team. I'm going to financially invest in this team. And I don't know what I'm going to get. And I don't know what I'm watching necessarily and what's going to potentially happen. And that may be a little hyperbole, but just think about the last year. Like, so, all right, so you're investing in Mike and Mike, and all of a sudden it's ripped out from you, and you go, and not that Calabro and Hurt aren't good, but just those things start to add up after a while, and there's only so much that I think fans can take.
Yeah, I don't think you're wrong there in that this incident could potentially spark the gathering of pitchforks and torches on Neil O'Shea.
Well, it definitely is. Canzano's been banned for a long time.
Yeah, and he discussed. No, he already did. He released a piece already. I mean, he called the Blazers. I don't know if it was the PR team or just the Blazers media in general. He called it Al Blazira today in reference to Al Jazeera. So yeah, no, he's already gone in. He actually outlined in an article in the Oregonian earlier the different basic bans that are in effect. How Canzano can't have a one-on-one with any of the players, with anybody inside the Blazers organization. The CBA permits, or does not permit the Blazers from, or keeping their players off the radio or any media platform. So if they want to go individually to Canzano or anybody else, they can. But he's not allowed to have anything in a group setting interview with the Blazers in the locker room. Or it could be he was banned from the locker room. But yeah, I mean, if you want to, you can go read it on the Oregonian. It's a pretty long list.
Yeah, and that's I think with Isaac, you'll start to get people that are more emboldened. The domino,
it seems like it fell
here,
right?
Yes. Yes, yes, this is the domino, but the explosion would be Quick. If Jason Quick wants to, whatever you think of Jason Quick, that guy's been around for a long time and he's got a lot of stories, and if he wanted to, he could do some damage with the pen.
I mean, he could probably burn the place down.
Yeah, so he'll kind of be the final piece. So we'll see how emboldened he becomes, because he had a tweet yesterday to the effect of, well, I'm not very happy about what's happening. And he was just honest. He was just honest about that. He's not happy about the situation.
And you
can
see it in his tone and his writing and what he's said and how he's been portrayed over the last 3 or 4 months.
Yeah. You know, you always hit a little bit of a sore subject with somebody when you bring it up and they immediately get like super offended by it. Like the Harkless story was just like an innocent, maybe Mo Harkless is going to be traded speculation from Blazers Edge. And it hit a nerve and you're like, whoa, whoa, whoa. I've stumbled across something here that runs way, way deeper than just trade speculation about Mo Harkless. Like that hit on something of somebody, or you ever have a friend or whatever, and you bring something up and it just like really affects them. You're like, whoa, that must've hit a sore spot that I had no idea was there. And Quick seems to be having those kind of build up. So I don't know how long he'll be around, but, and again, I think it's important to keep like a big picture view of this, that, you know, the media is not going to, when I say the media, 1080 The Fan, which is the most listened to station, they're not going to let up. They're going to keep going after him. Canzano's going to keep going after him.
If anything, those two are going to be emboldened.
Yep. And then, of course, Blazers Edge has always been good, but I mean, in terms of fairness, but, you know.
We're going to go where the story is. If the story keeps going, then yeah. And I mean, I keep going back to this after this whole situation. The more I kind of look at this now, the Blazers and Neil O'Shea could go one of two things here. They can sit back and kind of take their lumps on this and hope it goes away. And while I don't think that's the best course of action, it's probably the most prudent for them. Or they can try to fight back and refute everything and acknowledge everything and just turn this into a big war.
What do you think he'll do?
I think Neil O'Shea is too smart to go for number two. Because unless your name is R.C. Buford or Greg Popovich or Bob Myers or Steve Kerr, your job's not safe.
Mm-hmm.
That's just the nature of the NBA. I mean, that's just.
I think he'll be sarcastic about it and dismissive.
I wouldn't put it past him, but I think I don't think he's going to want to engage. I wouldn't. That's just me personally, because my whole point here is that not that his time is coming, but that those media members that we just got done talking about, they've all been here before O'Shea, and they'll be here long after.
Mm-hmm.
Canzano, Rop, James, Quick, they've all been here a very long time.
Yeah.
And they aren't going anywhere.
Nope.
So,
nope. Yep.
To me,
they'll be around.
You're talking, those guys right there represent the major outlets. I mean, the only guys we haven't really touched on are Joe Freeman and Mike Richmond of the Oregonian. And those are some of the if you were talking about like the tenure, they're some of the least tenured guys here. And that's nothing to say against them, but I would imagine that they'll be here for the long haul unless they opt to go somewhere else. But you're not going to win a battle against a force or a group that's, in a way, going to outlive you.
Here's the crazy thing. The Portland media is small. Like you said, you've got Freeman, you've got Richmond, you've got Quick, Dwight James, you got a couple radio
Canzano.
Stations.
That's your print media
and
right there.
That's it.
I mean,
that's it. That's all you got.
Yeah, radio.
Radio
stations.
Not that many.
You've got Rop, you've got Chad Dewing. You've got
Travis is there.
Wheels, Travis, Sheldon and Nigel. You've got, I mean, but
Dirt and Sprague.
Dirt and Sprague.
But,
yeah.
Again.
But again, these are all guys that we know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, everybody knows each other. It's a small group.
So small. I've got every single one of those guys you listed. I've got their number, and I've worked. Well, I've worked at 1080 The Fan. But it's a super small group of 25 people, 30 people. It's not that big.
And if
it really
you,
isn't.
And to me, if you try to go to war with that, they'll unify against you before you ever have a chance.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, at least that's my take on it, at least.
Yeah, and I think you need, especially when things are going bad, there is a softening that Mike Riley is the example that I always use versus Mark Helfrich, right? Mark Helfrich just wasn't very savvy, and the Ducks are an example of a school that did the same thing. Did
they
this
got
exact
too big
same
for their britches
thing.
And the ego setting. Got,
and then they got crushed, and they had, and now you've got things going on with the Ducks program with their assistant coaches and Willie Taggart. And it's like, all right, if you treat people terribly, when you start to fall,
that coverage,
they're not
going to
have your back. They're not going to have your back. No. They're going to go after you.
What was going to be bad coverage is going to turn into visceral coverage.
But when you're Mike Riley and you're losing, people go, yeah, he's a nice guy. Give him a chance. And that's like you said earlier, that's part of the natural media reaction. And the underlying in all this is you're always going to be a Blazer fan. It's never going to change. It's not going to change your fandom. It just changes how you feel about things. It changes how you react to stories. It changes when you hear. It just changes how you feel. Like if Neil O'Shea doesn't make a move at the deadline, it just changes. It just does.
Well,
this is
a perfect
example
of recent Blazer history. Kevin Pritchard, who didn't love KP.
Right. Yeah. He was loved. And then Paul Allen didn't love KP.
But I mean, media and fans.
But he was beloved by fans and media.
When he gets axed on draft day. Where does the ire of the fan go? Straight to the top. It went straight to the top. And
yeah, I wonder.
And I think, well, let's see. Part of that is because how good KP was with the media. It was an open communication line both ways. And there were times where even where he admitted making mistakes. And that's rare to see, first of all. And that's not just the Trailblazers. That's just in sport. You just don't see guys say, you know what, we didn't do this right or that right or whatever. So that
and it's really not
crazy.
That hard. Yeah, it's really not that hard to play the media. It's not, you know, they're not that complicated. Just be nice. Give them a little bit of access, compliment them every now and then. Yeah, that's just like a relationship, man.
The thing is, you can be critical of the media, too. Like, sure. If you're having an open, honest communication between the organization and the media, then again, I'm not just talking strictly Blazers here. I'm talking overall. If you think that everybody that I've ever talked to, at least, if somebody has come to them with a legit gripe within an organization, said, hey, man, I didn't think that piece you did was fair. They've accepted that and either owned it and said, you know what, maybe I could have done something differently and wrote an addendum, you know, the next day or the next week. Or they said, no, here's why I think that's fair. And you can agree to disagree or go whatever way you want to go with that. But that, to me, that's how this is supposed to work.
And here's the thing that sports media has, that conservative radio has, that is missing a little bit from politics outside of conservatism, which is why conservative talk radio does so well, is that in general, the media is not liked, right? The media is not trusted, and they're not liked on a national scale. But there's something about the media of your local team, and even then, like I think Jason Quick is not a very liked guy in Portland, you know, just in general. But Chad Dewing's loved in Portland. People love Chad. So I think radio and blogs and forums and different outlets that you can have to, like Mike is on Twitter. Really, really good, I think, Gingrich of the Oregonian, and they got a fun personality, and that comes out. All of that to say is that if you're picking a battle, you know, a lot of times the media is going to lose that, right? The media, when they're taking on somebody, is usually on the losing end of that because the media is viewed unfavorably. But the challenge is if Rush Limbaugh or Howard Stern is going after somebody, they've got a legion of supporters that are behind them. And Isaac is no different than that. Isaac has, you know, you should look at go to the tweet, IROP, and look at all the responses that he has about, in favor, coming to his defense. That's 17 years
of broadcasting. Honestly, I didn't see a single thing like, oh, you had this coming or you deserve this, whatever. And, you know, we posted Isaac's full transcript of the audio on Blazers Edge. And that's probably a more accurate description of the fan base in Portland, because it's not just people who follow Isaac Rop on Twitter who are, I would say, more prone to favor him in any instance. And I'd say probably still 80 to 85% of the comments were in his favor.
Mm-hmm. And I know, I just know from my experience that I was told by the Blazers that I could say whatever I wanted to. That was my experience. Isaac had a different experience. That's a problem, right? If somebody is coming in and overriding what the people who are in charge at an organizational level, the day-to-day people, are saying, no, go ahead, say whatever you want. That's in our best interest if you do that. And then somebody higher up comes in and says, not so fast. That's an organizational problem that exists.
Yeah, it's really...
It's fascinating, though.
It's fascinating, but also draining, and kind of makes me feel a little bit dirty. Like the fact that we're having to have this conversation is weird. I'm not so naive to sit here and think that this kind of thing doesn't happen.
Yeah, it's very insider. I think it's a very insiderish conversation.
Yeah,
I think it's very interesting to people because I think the business of media, like I just saw this on Twitter that Bill Simmons did an interview about his first. I find this, and I know a lot of fans do. You love behind the scenes. You love how the movie was made.
Oh, hell
yeah.
You
love the blooper reel.
You'll watch it every single time as soon as it comes on. You may not actively seek it out, but as soon as you see it, you ain't changing the channel.
Nope. And so you love the access, and sports fans in particular like hearing about not only the media's lives, but the lives of the people in charge of their team. And that's how you find out about it, is through media most of the time, and personalities. And you can get that in social media with players and stuff. But I'm talking about like Neil O'Shea, Chris McGowan, Paul Allen, right? Those guys you get access to from stories, from media. So whenever you get like, here's how it happened, here's what I was told, I don't know, people like being in the know, right? They like inside information. So that, yeah, it's a dirty conversation for sure. But I do think, yeah, it is insiderish, but it's also, I think, interesting to fans. At least I find it interesting.
Well, we're going to go ahead and wrap it up here, just because this is one of those situations that I think is going to keep kind of, it's going to go, like I said, one of two ways, and we'll kind of monitor it over the next couple days, couple weeks, and maybe we'll revisit it once we, you know, kind of know everything that's going on here. But I'd be remiss if I didn't say, you know, I didn't miss talking about actual basketball. So we'll be back here in a couple days to hit up a basketball podcast.
Yeah, well, and in fairness, I mean, they're good now, and they're playing well now. They're playing the Mavericks tonight, but 4-1 in their last five. But basketball is still important, obviously, to talk about.
But it's falling secondary to this kind of discussion right now. And it's not just us. It's everywhere in Portland right now.
No, but but the reason this matters is because this has been festering for a really, really long time, and it's just now coming to the surface, and it sends ripples effects out, and it's important, and it does matter, and it is going to have some sort of impact, and there will be reactions one way or the other that you'll see tonight. And again, we have a different perspective and a unique perspective. You talked to Isaac earlier today. You're involved. You're going to the game tonight. I worked with Isaac for 6 years, and I was a part of the Blazers flagship radio station. So, yeah, we definitely had a unique perspective that's worth talking about. I can't wait to see where it goes. But, yeah, well, always time to talk basketball.
So we'll go ahead and end this here. We'll come back here in a few days. This is kind of an impromptu podcast. But we'll be back to talk just strictly basketball, hopefully, as the Blazers have a chance to go 4-1 on their 5-game homestand before they kick out on the road. For Taylor Danforth, I'm Dan Morang. This has been the Trailing Blazers podcast. You can, again, find us on iTunes as part of the Almighty Baller Podcast Network. You can find us on Blog Talk Radio, on Twitter, at Trailing Blazers. Taylor's on Twitter as well, at Taylor A. Danforth. I am your co-host, Dan Morang, at D. Morang. And I believe that covers all the plugs. So until next time, we'll go ahead and talk to you then.
And now, insurance-minded speeches from GEICO.
It's a common expression, don't look a gift horse in the mouth. However, what if the horse's mouth is filled with useful insurance tools? This is the exact case with the GEICO app. Yes, the app is free and therefore a gift horse. However, look inside the app and behold, emergency roadside assistance, digital ID cards, bill pay. Get the GEICO app. Look it in the mouth. Get amazing services. Thank you.